This is Unleashing Your Great Work, a podcast about doing the work that matters the most to you. I'm Dr. Amanda Kroll, a cognitive psychologist and the author of the book, Great Work. Every week on this podcast, we make bold plans and we take small steps, all so we can build a life that's powered by your great work. Welcome to the podcast, AJ.
I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, back on the podcast. I'm excited that you're here. AJ was a guest on this podcast when the first edition of Great Work came out. She's the person who I actually kind of give all the credit to take me from sort of a wild, disparate idea and using your ideas from Write a Must Read, actually pull it into a book that people seem to like, which is awesome. So let me use that as a jumping off point and ask you, tell us, AJ, a little bit about your great work.
Right now, my great work is helping authors write must-read books that are category-defining in their genre, that people love, dog ear, highlight, underline, keep forever, and recommend to everyone. But I think that my great work is evolving into helping authors and other creators stay in the game.
Say more about that.
When I became a teacher and I retired from ghostwriting and started focusing on sharing my own methodology with others and teaching, and I had no teaching experience, no coaching experience. I didn't really know what was going to happen, but I found that what I knew to be true as a ghost was 10 times that as a teacher, which is most people are painfully insecure about writing books. Even the most successful people in their field will be reduced to victim of their inner critic when it comes to writing the book. Not all the time, but often enough that I lose a lot of people sometimes, And I spend a lot of time, or I did in the beginning, and I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how can I get them to stay in it. You're a part of our Writing Sprint community, and that was one of the ways that I came up with to try and get people to stay in it. So I've found that unexpectedly, my great work is probably leaning more toward helping people not give up. Because I know if I can get people to just not give up, and it's not just about finishing, it's also about supporting, spreading the word, nurturing, staying in it longer than you think, letting books have a longer life, not giving up on everything before you see the real fruits of it. That's really important to me because I want people to see their message in the world. And most of them are giving up at some point in the process. So I'm studying this and learning about this and working on it in a small level in my own community. But I think that's where my great work is going.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
My great work is working now. People are writing books that are incredible, not just regular old, but including yourself.
Thank you.
That people really love, that are critically acclaimed, that are making a real difference. And I know this matters to some people. Also, a lot of them are selling really, really well.
Yeah.
So I'm doing that. I think there's more for me to do.
Yeah, I think so. Well, and I think like once you know that the baseline, base camp one, that the book they can write when they finish it can be a game changer, then the next frontier is to get more people over that finish line, which is essentially what you're saying, like stay in it so that you can have this, you know, the fruition of all of this.
Yes, because I think people are taking misinformation and disinformation in the world and unrealistic expectations and all the just gobbledygook that they soak in as evidence that they shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's just false. It's just smoke and mirrors and a pack of lies.
Smoke and mirrors and a pack of lies.
Yeah, that's what's happening. And it makes me sad because they could be doing what they want to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm into that. I'm exploring that right now. And I do that in my own small community, but I want to make it more available because we need more people to speak up and do what they want to do.
That's absolutely right. I feel like you just named my whole reason for doing the focus on great work. It's like if more people are doing what really matters to them, they'll be in their juice, we'll be less divisive. Like the world will be a better place when we know ourselves well enough know what we care about, be in community with people who care about that too. That's the answer, I think, to a lot of what ails at least our society and the way it's sort of functioning.
Agreed.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, and you mentioned doing this in your community, which is, I am a member of the community. I'm in the Sprints community. I love it so much. And I have made so many connections and everybody's so we'll just put a link to that Sprints community for anybody who, even if you're just sort of starting to think about writing your book, come be surrounded by people who believe in you. That's a great community.
Can I say one more plug?
Yeah.
First of all, you don't have to be writing a book. You can write whatever you want. And secondly, yeah, I have pay what you can. And this is just very important to me. You know, there is a set price, but actually there's another button to the right of it. And it just says pay what you can. And I don't keep track of it. And you don't have to apply. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to give a reason. You can just do it. So I just want people to know that it's in all kinds of folks in there.
Yeah. I think that's one of the most, you know, you're just so, one of the things I love about AJ Harper is how incredibly authentic and full of integrity she is in everything she does. She says it, it's the truth. And you'll find it, like, it goes all the way down to the roots of the tree and it comes out in every product that she does. Like, she just is who she is. And I think that's amazing. And there's many things I admire about you. And I think that related to your just incredible integrity is your ability to be so grounded in who you are, while also I have watched you over the last 5 years or more just build these incredible relationships with other people. You are a great collaborator. So you have a team of people that work with you. You have a dean of students and you can tell us who your team is, but you also famously are the writing partner in Mike Michalowicz's book series of however many millions of books that is now. Like, how many is it?
Does
it
we just end? Wrote book 12.
Book 12, right. Yeah, you just wrote book 12. That's amazing. And also you have been involved in the whole time I've known them in the company Heroic. It used to be called Heroic Public Speaking. So like that's a lot of collaborations for one person.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I really wanted to talk about with you today, because the second edition of Great Work, as you know, is coming out June 10th. And the main addition to it is a chapter on collaboration. So I'd love to hear your take on how other people have played an almost, maybe perhaps, magical role in your great work in its development.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I should say that I love collaboration. I know we talked before this about I do see myself as a lone wolf a lot of the time. I keep a really lean team. Mm. I like to work on my own ideas first before I bring them to a group.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always been a collaborator because I started out as a playwright. Mm-hmm. And playwrights, no play is written by just one person. It's not done until you've workshopped it. There's a dramaturg, the actors, the director. All those people are involved in it. And the way you described the model, the collaboration model in your book prior to us talking, makes total sense to me, because at the end of it, you talk about this innovation place and this unleashing. And that's the goal of that, is that the actors and the dramaturg and the director inform the work and might shape and change the work into something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's very natural to collaborate. I think I just decide when I'm going to do it. I think in business, I'm more of a lone wolf. But with a creative project, not at all. I'm happy to be collaborating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. So and I don't have any resistance to it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started writing books, that was already a collaboration because I was ghostwriting.
Right.
So
I had no other option.
Yeah. And I like it.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun for me. I also had a publishing company, and that was a collaboration too, because I had two business partners. We sold that company. Was very proud of that. It was for fiction. Mm-hmm. So it's very normal for me as an editor. That's a collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Collaborating with the author. So, but the last 5 years, I think the part I've been reticent about, the lone wolf part, is staff, like, you know, business related.
Yeah.
I'm used to just doing I was a freelancer for, you know, a ghostwriter and doing my own thing for a really long time. I want to say 12 years.
Yeah.
11 years on my own.
Yeah.
Until I hired Laura. And Laura Stone is my dean of students, and she is, I'm very, very lucky to have her. And I intentionally chose her based on her attributes and then nurtured the things that she does best and loves to do. And those aren't the things that I do best.
So, which is why you chose her, because she has this different
skill set. Yeah. And then now we have Sade, and she is our admin and marketing coordinator, but heavy on the marketing. And another thing that I don't, both Laura and I were overwhelmed and we couldn't, we were always falling short on that. And now we're not falling short on that.
Yeah.
And the thing that I love about both of them is giving them space to share their values and vision and ideas and where they might want to take things, and just that they can do, bring me to places that I can't do on my own.
Yeah. And one of the things I'm wondering about as I'm writing this chapter is sort of like, what are, because at the core of, I think, overcoming resistance to collaboration is trust, right? Like, and it's not really, that starts to sound like you have to trust other people not to mess up your great work. But actually, I don't think you can trust other people not to make mistakes, because they will make mistakes. They will take things in unusual directions.
Yeah.
So it's actually, you have to trust yourself to be able to navigate it.
Yeah. You know, but I do trust my collaborators. You know, I write with Mike Michalowicz. His name is on the book, but he's always been forthright. After the second book, he's been forthright about working with me.
Yeah.
And we have a deep relationship for sure.
Mm-hmm. I love your podcast, by the way. They have a podcast together called Don't Write That Book. That's what it's called, right? Yeah. And I love listening to you two talk. It's like listening to best friends. Kind of semi-bickering, but also just loving on each other. Yeah. I really love that podcast. I'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Thank you. That's another collaboration.
Yep. Collaborating machine over there.
Yeah, I love it. I think, but here's the thing. And even with Heroic, I'm not attached. So you're talking about trust, but I think there's another element. And trust was a factor. I mean, when I joined Heroic as a writing coach, and now I'm the lead writing faculty over there. And now I design programs over there. So it really grew into a huge collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
I went and tested them out. I went to see, can I trust these people? Mm-hmm. I went to see if they're my kind of people.
Right.
And when I chose to quit ghostwriting, Mike's the only person I decided to keep writing with.
Mm-hmm.
That was a trust factor. So you're right. Trust is huge.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I think part of what blocks people from collaboration is that feeling like you don't want anybody to mess with your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because you're worried that it might be your only stuff.
That's such an interesting point.
I really think that if people really thought about it, it's like a scarcity thing, but in terms of ideas and creative intellectual property. And I just don't worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because how many books have you written? Like some obscene number, like hundreds.
I don't even know at this point, but I'm talking about just ideas. I love sharing and growing and bringing stuff together and finding cool things and together. One of my favorite things to do is I would do with Michael Port at Heroic. We would occasionally work together on VIP clients where I would write the script and he would direct the script and we get to workshop it together. Mm-hmm. And I'm married to the words on the page.
Yeah.
And I'm also not married to the words on the page for Mike's book. And I'm not, and I, when I write my own book, write a must read, I want what the editor has to say to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I, even with the readers are collaborators.
Yeah.
Readers give me feedback. I want to hear it.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. And I think there's a block we have or people have, because I don't have it.
Yeah.
Is it's just like almost like this is my thing and I might not have another thing.
Yeah. Or even what you said at the very beginning, this thing that I have, am I really sure I have it? You know, like, do I actually think that if people start pushing on it, they're going to show me that my holes are too big. I don't know what I'm talking about. Who wants to hear from me anyways? Like that insecurity, those trolls.
Oh yeah. The trolls. And see, I guess maybe it's the fact that I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about the holes. I'll find a way to plug the hole or I'll just make something else.
Right.
There's a sort of creative confidence that you need to have that there's more inside of you, that you will find a way to make it better, that you can do it, you know? And it's not like I haven't had collaborations that weren't great, you know? I have definitely butt heads with people. And what I usually will do is I just step back and decide, well, part of this matters to me versus the whole thing.
Yeah, right.
And then if I really can't, I will, you know, kind of do my fade out. It's like my own version of ghosting a little bit, where I'm just not as, you know, interested.
Yeah.
It's pretty rare. I think you have to come to it with an openness that this is not all you've got. You have a full bag of tricks. Like it's bottomless.
Yeah.
And if you think that it's just this one thing and it's limited, I think it prevents you from collaborating.
Yeah. And you not only, it's almost like you have to understand that you can trust the human being as a, that not just you have lots of good ideas. The person you're talking to is not just the one mistake maybe they made in the beginning because they weren't understanding what you were saying or the miss, you know, that you can be in relationship with other people who also have depths inside of them. I recently read a poem called The Wilderness That Bears Your Name. And I can't get it out of my mind as a concept. Like there's this name and behind it, this massive wilderness, like all this mystery, all these ideas, so much inside of a single person, which helps to explain this feeling of magic that happens when collaboration starts to click. And if you're stopping it from clicking, maybe because you're not so sure about your own ideas, or you're being protective or controlling because you think it's your only idea, or you're looking so skeptically at other people and thinking maybe you don't have the goods, if, you know, there's this relaxation into like, if everybody's got this wilderness, can we bring it together and make magic? Is the promise of collaboration. Like that's what actually has gotten me out of my, like, you know, retrenchment, and to think like, if I want to do this great work, right? If I want to have the biggest possible impact, then need other people to help me do it.
I believe that. I do. I think the one thing I would say is you need to be aligned on values.
If
you're not aligned on that. Well, when I was a ghostwriter, I had a lot of clients and partnerships with folks that at the time I didn't really understand the landscape of publishing. And then once I figured it out, I realized that I was aligning myself with people and working for people who were not, it's just a lot of that children's book, The Emperor Doesn't.
The Emperor Has No Clothes.
Emperor Has No Clothes. It was a lot of that. So I had to really decide what mattered to me. So there are definitely people that have asked me to collaborate that I have not collaborated with. Because I know just based on the language they're using or the outcomes they're promising or their own goals, that we're not going to be a good fit because we just don't share the same set of values. Yeah. And I think if you can get a baseline, you don't have to be aligned on every single thing, but you have to decide what are your deal breakers.
Yeah.
And just like with any relationship, you know, and if you can line up on the deal breakers, I think you'll be okay. Then that's a safer place to collaborate.
Yeah, safer. So I want to talk about, you have all these amazing collaborations, and I know most of the people that you're talking about collaborating with, and there's some very powerful personalities kind of across the board, right? So it can't be the case that it's all sunshine and rainbows. So what are some of the maybe disagreements or moments of hardship? And how do you, like, what do you think the skills are, or how have you been able to negotiate with all those powerful personalities to be able to successfully collaborate?
Well, I have a very clear, and now through the book and my work with others, people know who I am and what I stand for. So if they're asking me to collaborate, sometimes it's because they just want to align for some reason, but mostly they know what I stand for. So I don't have a lot of challenges in that respect. Like I don't have people who are saying, well, let's just help people write books as fast as they can and they'll just write whatever's there and it's fine. Like I'm not going to have those kind of conflicts. So again, if I don't have the conflicts about values, I'm actually not that, I don't really have a lot of conflicts.
Interesting.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Maybe this is good. Maybe this isn't good. I don't know, but I'm used to really successful people and working with them.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of ego when it comes to it. Mm. So I'm not, if I don't, if it's not crossing one of my deal breakers, and they have really strong feelings about something that matters a lot to them, and I'm cool with it, I just don't, like, it's cool.
You don't fight it.
I don't fight it. I decide what matters to me. I decide every decision I make to collaborate is strategic for me.
Mm-hmm.
I play a really long game. So with that, so I'm always thinking about how is this going to work out for me 2 years from now, 3 years from now? Will this be fun? That's actually one of my major things that I decide if I want to collaborate or not.
Yeah.
Do I like this person? Are we going to have a good time together?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really end up with too many conflicts like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe not big conflicts, but it never happens where Laura, for example, says, I really think that we should do this. We should add another sprint at noon. And you say, I don't think we have the resources for that. And you never like have to negotiate that? Or is it like, you're like, no, Laura gets to decide and I don't have to.
Well, she's not my business partner. You know, I mean, she's my employee.
Right.
So if she feels strong about something and I think it's cool, then we do it. And if it's something that I don't think makes sense for my own strategic planning or what I think will work, then we don't do it.
So interesting. It seems like you have it set up where it's like, it's just really, really clear to you who the decision maker is.
Yeah, that's
me. And the decision maker makes the decision.
Yes. However, I'm very open to ideas, you know?
Yeah.
If I feel strongly that it's not what I want to do, then I'll say that's not the right time or we're not going to do that right now. But, you know, you need a decision maker.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's a really important, right? Somebody has to know, they have to know their role. I do think sometimes people collaborate because they're not necessarily so sure what they want. Like I often see like my clients who maybe are getting a VA for the very first time and they're looking to their VA to like tell them what to do. And so there's some misconceptions in that where it's like,
oh yeah,
trying to figure out.
I look to Sade to tell me what to do about marketing. What do you want me to do here? Say here.
Yeah.
But you know, I also will say, you know, just this morning we're working on some marketing copy and I kind of wanted to take it another tone. So, you know, I'll say, actually, I'm kind of going for this. And she'll say, okay, so let's, and we just work on it. I mean, I value them so much. Mm-hmm. They bring things to me. I'm not like the no machine, you know?
Yeah.
But there's things that I think the decision maker, you need a decision maker. It can get challenging otherwise. In my partnership with Mike, even though he will ask me about almost every decision about the book itself.
Yeah.
He is the ultimate decision maker.
Mm.
It's his name on the cover.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah. He definitely consults with me about everything. What do you think? Which one do you like? What should we do? Mm-hmm. And if I really say, Mike, I'm solid, I'm pushing back on this, he totally respects it. And if Laura came to me and then Sade came to me and said, I need you to hear me.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to reconsider. I absolutely would.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not, I think there's just, but you still need the decision maker. At Heroic, I don't own Heroic.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So and I know that. And I'm really good at my place. I remember I was at an early Heroic event and I think it was my first time being a writing coach there many years ago. And I think we were in Philly and there had been some people who were raising hands when only the students should have been raising hands. And I remember Amy Port coming up to me and I didn't know her very well at all. And she said, we're just going to have the students raising hands, you know, just to kind of prevent me from joining in with the staff raising hands. And I was in the back of the room and I said, it's your show. You know, like I'm a theater kid. So I always use that same terminology.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in the back of the room for a reason. I don't feel bad being there. I just know it's not my show.
Mm-hmm.
In my business, it's my show.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. When I'm working with Mike, it's technically Mike's show. Our podcast is both of us. But I think so you can have different types of collaborations with people.
Yeah.
You know, when I invite Michael Port to come do something with my community, that's my show. If I'm over at Heroic, that's his show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you need to know like who's ultimately making decisions here. And as long as you have shared values and respect each other, it'll be fine.
So I love one of the things, I'm a cognitive psychologist, as I think everybody who would be listening to this knows. And one of my very favorite areas of cognitive psychology is expertise. Like, what does it actually look like when somebody is an expert, a master, like the very best at something? And I just love it. I just think it's so fascinating to see how the mind of an expert differs from the mind of a novice. And one of the reasons we study expertise, especially in the school space, is because it gives us this end point to point to. You know, like, this is what it looks like when, in this case, collaboration is at a mastery level. So it really sounds like what you're describing is like what we are all sort of should be pointing towards. And so we're hearing that you need to know who the decision maker is, working with people that are at a level that you can categorically respect and understand that they know themselves as well as you know yourself, which means that we all need to get busy knowing ourselves and find other people who know themselves well. And I think there's something so sort of zen about the way that you describe, once it's not your show, they make the decisions. I'm not, even the part you are the one who knows everything about, I'm not married to the words on the page. Mm-mm. I'll change them if I need to. Mm-hmm. That's very, very martial artist of you. Very like moving with the flow of the zen.
You know what? It's a happy place to be. It's really hard to collaborate with people when you're rigid.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't let go and see, maybe it's not going to be exactly what you pictured it would be. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think it goes back to thinking that we only have this one chance.
Right.
Or this one bag of tricks or this one good idea. I really think that.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that is an important point because especially for maybe the super novice people who are writing, maybe like they're writing a book before they ever really even wrote like 100 or 200 blogs or something. Because I remember I was writing my book. I already knew I had 200 like ideas already. I was very confident in the number of ideas that I have. But I remember talking to other people who were just getting started and they're like, I don't want anyone to see it. I don't want to tell anybody what it is because what if they steal it? Like, like such a misunderstanding of what it takes to bring an idea to the world and really like flesh it out and share it and all of that.
You're exactly right. Because part of bringing your great work to the world is the just massive undertaking of how will people find it? How will it be packaged? How will it be delivered?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to care? How do I keep it alive? How do I frame it? Like all of that is huge no matter what type of product or creative output it is. And someone has to be willing to take all that on.
Yeah. You have to be willing to take it all on and then you have to be willing to let some of it go.
Well, I mean, if people are going to steal it, they have to be willing to do it.
Oh, yes. That's right.
You know? Which
they aren't. Especially because it's not really theirs. Like,
it's
yours. Yeah.
I think novices are very worried about their stuff being stolen. And I think that energy can come forward into collaborations.
Yeah.
And it's people won't say that.
Man. Well, because they don't know.
Look, all the ideas are going around and around and coming in and out of my brain and into yours. And, you know, we have to pursue them with some speed.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get an idea and then it get to keep it in the drawer forever. This is going to sound a little hoo-ha, like woo-woo. Like,
I like it. Let's hear it.
But, I have no science to back this up.
Yeah.
It's purely anecdotal.
Yeah.
But I think that the universe wants us to make stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Make stuff.
Yeah.
And if we get the little tap that says, ooh, what if you made that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to stick around for a couple decades while you try to get the nerve up to do it.
I know.
And I've seen it happen where it just goes, okay, let me go find somebody else.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds cutesy and weird, but there are documented cases of people getting the exact same idea.
Yeah.
And they had no knowledge of each other and no, in any way, communication or any ability to, nothing.
The universe, it's the phenomenon of multiple discovery in science.
Okay, thank you. So I didn't know the science behind it. I've just seen it happen all the time.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a science behind it. It's just a thing that happens in science where out of nowhere, two people discover the same ion or something. And it's like, how could that happen? We were secretly in our lab doing all this. It's like, yeah, but the world the universe of ideas, right? The structure of ideas in the universe is supporting particular innovations as insights come in and ideas are being shared in the world. Like, of course, the same idea is going to pop out in a couple of different places because it's the idea that the world maybe needs next.
So we see this with books all the time, and I'll hear this from authors frequently. It just happened this week. And I was in writing sprints and one of the authors said, I just saw a book coming out that's my exact same book. And immediately this is my thought. It's not. It's not.
Yeah.
And I said, good. That means it's in the world. We're all wanting it. We're all needing it.
It's creating a market for you.
Yeah. And in on that woo-woo level again, it's like a bunch of people are being called to write about this because this is what's happening. This is good for you. I had, I told her this story. Trisha Tim, she wrote Embrace the Power of You. She's one of my workshop alums.
Yep.
It's in a great book. Multi-award winning book. And she, when she was kind of rounding third base on it, she had a panic email to me and she found out about The Few, The Something, The Only.
I know that book. I can't remember the name
of it. It's by Deepa. Her last name starts with a P. My apologies to Deepa, who I don't know, but at any rate, it had just come out. And I said, okay, yes, that first of all, it's not the same book. And secondly, yes, it's on a similar topic. And third, contact her right now and become friends with her.
Yeah.
And she hadn't considered it. And see, this is the thing I'm saying is we think, oh, I want it to just be me. And it has to just be me. But actually it's not. And they turned out, they became great colleagues and friends. Deepa actually emceed Trisha's launch. They do stuff together.
Yeah.
You know, that's collaboration too. Collaboration can be in a promotional aspect where you both have similar audiences and you want to help them.
Yeah.
You know, I think we don't have to hold it so close.
No. If we do, we restrict what it can become.
Yes. And so I think that's why I've been a successful collaborator because I don't hold on so tightly. I mean, I definitely care about my intellectual property.
Yeah.
Want to protect it, but I don't go into a meeting, a brainstorming session and decide I'm not going to share what I've got.
Right. Because exactly. There's also just, I feel like the better you become at helping people flesh out their ideas, the better your ideas become because we're in relationship with each other because it's a human skill to actually to explore ideas. And the better we get at it, the better we get to be at it and other people benefit from it too. And you can't brainstorm without other people. You can't develop those skills without them.
Yeah. And whenever I disagree with folks or we have, I keep trying to think of a conflict thing for you. I think it's important that you can state why. So if you can say, this is what I think and here's why. That's better than just saying no, or I disagree, or that's not how I do things. The only conflict I can come up with is, you know, was a relationship conflict when Mike and I had a creative breakup.
Yes, I've heard this story on your website, but you can tell it briefly here.
We only ever really told it on the podcast. So, but that's the only time I can think of. And that was mostly because we have very different styles. And I had kind of been swallowed up by the mic machine. And I was feeling deeply resentful about that. So here's another tip on collaboration. I had to learn, what are you going to keep for yourself? What space are you going to keep for yourself? So, because you can easily get swallowed up if you're good at what you do.
Yeah. Yes.
People, and they're not doing it maliciously.
Right. It feels like exploitation, but it's not intended that way.
Not intended at all. It's because people love you and love working with you and they think you're just you know what? And that happened to me a lot. And, you know, you start to build a resentment. And so you need to carve out that space for yourself so you can set better boundaries.
Well, I think it comes back to the first thing you said, which is like that you know who you are. Like, oh, I guess I said it actually, that you know who you are, right? You have a ton of integrity. You have like cleared it of all debris. Like it's very clear what is your, well, maybe not all.
I mean, we're always clearing.
Yes, right. But as far as like your work persona, or not persona, but your work self, the one that I'm most familiar with, like AJ Harper is who AJ Harper is, period.
That's true.
Yeah. And I think that probably, I mean, it sounds like just in the stories that you've told, like when you were a ghost, like you did do some projects outside of your integrity until you were like, nope, no more of that. And even with Mike, it was like, this is getting a little outside of my integrity. Pull back, repair, move into it in a more clean and clear way. Is, you know, once you're doing collaboration, you get to develop those next level skills. Sometimes I think people feel like, I can't do that because I've never done that. Whatever it is, all great work is something that, like, even you describing your next book is not an area you've done before. That's what makes it great work. It's on your edge, you know, it's pushing you out into like new explorations. So you couldn't possibly know how to do it. So stop expecting yourself to know how to do it. Start doing it and like learn your way through it.
You're totally right.
Yeah. And I think that's something that requires, like, that's just like a lifetime of, you know, doing things I've never done before. There is no, I at this point, I'm like, well, let's just go do it because I can't learn anything on this side of not doing it. So I think that's one of those things that you learn by doing it. So if collaboration is requisite in that space, then going and figuring out, like, having some bad arguments if you need to, and figuring out how to prevent some of those or navigate them, repair relationships, important relationships that maybe you have a breakup and then you repair it and you come back together stronger. Those things happen, but not if you're not, if you're refusing out of fear of those things to do it in the first place.
Yeah. What, so well said. You know, I think I was a teenager when I started writing plays, even professionally. Yeah. It's not like I made a ton of money, but I was doing professional gigs.
Amazing.
I was watching people collaborate and I was forced to collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
So I was too young to really object. I didn't know anything about who I was at the time.
Yeah.
But I will say one thing I did for myself is I put myself in situations where I could see how other people did it.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you aren't ready to do it yourself, you can still witness it.
Yes. Very, very good point.
Like, I would intern or volunteer for workshops, or the Playwright Center used to have this thing called Play Labs. They may still have it. And I would, and they would do, you know, 6 or 8 plays, and you're watching all the collaborators, the actors, the playwright, the dramaturg, the director, all in their rehearsals and how they talk and how they communicate and how it changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept putting myself in sort of the rooms, the table, and just sit quietly and listen and pay attention. And you can do that at any age.
Yeah. Yes. And actually bringing it full circle, one great room to do that in actually is any room AJ Harper is running. So the sprints room, if you aren't, you know, if you're just getting started writing, because we, you know, we mostly work just so we don't get in trouble with AJ, but we also talk a lot at the beginning, sometimes in the middle and at the end where people ask questions. And it really does start to teach you what the common questions and considering how to be supportive of a writer. So if you're trying to like learn your way into being a writer, you can do that. And also you have, for the people who are actually ready to write the top three, someone else's top three book, they can join the workshop, which is in the fall. Is that right? Tell us about the workshop.
It starts in August and runs until Thanksgiving. And I only take 15 students a year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a one-time thing, gauntlet of, and the way people get the most of me, I guess,
as
I'm their editor and coach during the process, which I don't do the rest of the time, year.
Yeah.
But can I just make one little correction?
Yes.
Remember we said show? That collab, the Spreading Sprints was my idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it evolved into Laura's show.
Ah.
So you just said AJ, but actually I think of it as Laura's.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there on Fridays and yes, I created it, but she has this tremendous gift for hospitality is not the right word, but it's like a combination of cheerleading, hospitality, nurturing.
Yeah.
Your BFF.
Yep.
Then commanding the room.
Mm-hmm.
With set boundaries and rules. I mean, she's just magic.
Yes, it's true.
And I realized after we'd been doing it a couple of years, I think, I was like, oh, this is Laura's show.
Mm-hmm.
Let me let her loose. Let me just let her own it. And so I'm there on Fridays because she doesn't work Fridays. But if she did work Fridays, I probably, you know, like, I'll come when you ask me to.
Yeah.
That was a collaboration. That was a shift where she made it better. Which is what she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I was willing to let it go.
Right.
Because she's better at it.
Right. And why not give your community, who I know you care so much about, the very best? And we're not always the very best.
No.
And that's okay too.
No, I mean, I knew when I asked her to join my team and hired her that I couldn't do the thing that a lot of authors need consistently. I am a nurturing person. I definitely am. But honestly, if you decide that you're not going to work on your book, I'm probably not going to hound you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm more of a like, okay, well, I'm not going to chase you down, you know, mm-hmm. do your thing. I needed someone who was going to say, hey, knock, knock, you know, how's you doing? You want to mm-hmm. come back to community? And to just be tracking them in that way and supporting them in that way. And I think if you know, this is the area that I don't do mm-hmm. well in. Now I shine, she shines. And now Sade in her own way shines.
And the company shines.
The company shines.
Yeah.
You're so good at this. Can I just say that? I know you're about to wrap it up.
Interviewing?
You're so good at it.
Oh.
And I've been on so many things where it's the same thing.
Mm.
And I just really appreciate you.
Oh, well, likewise, my friend. Hardcore. So I don't want you to get away from this podcast without knowing that if you want to be in AJ's top three workshop, you should, first of all, well worth the investment. You should get on it because I think you have spaces now, but you won't for long.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
So go to ajharper.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
And top three book workshop, but you can find anything about me there.
Sign up for whatever newsletter. I think it's tips, great tips, all the tips. I do like your newsletter. So get in her world, come to Sprints, join that workshop. There's also a membership. There's lots of different ways, every level. So yeah, just come and be in community with us is my point. I'm always there in the mornings. I don't do the afternoons, but yeah, it's a great community. And I'm just so grateful to be a part of it. And thank you so much for taking some time out of your very busy schedule with your 19,000 collaborations to talk to me about this today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Unleashing Your Great Work. If this episode sparked something for you, you'll love the Great Work audiobook, narrated by me, and now available on Audible. It's the perfect way to go deeper while you walk, drive, or just take a breath. Search Great Work by Amanda Crowell on Audible, or grab the link from the show notes below. And if you're enjoying this show, follow it, rate it, and review it. It really helps more people find their great work.